Hello, and thanks for joining us for this latest episode of Education in Focus South Asia, a series of podcasts focusing on areas of debate in education in the South Asia region, brought to you by the British Council. My name's Rob Lewis, and later on you'll be hearing my co-presenter, Simon Borg. There's no doubt that in recent times, education systems around the world have been changing at the most fundamental curricular level. In South Asia, it's no different. I spoke to Ravneet Bains, currently with Pearson India and with substantial experience in the education sector in the region, to get an idea of the nature of some of those changes. Ravneet mentioned to me, for instance, that in India, the central government has committed to reducing the school syllabus by huge amounts, around 30% in the coming year. I asked Ravneet why that was, and if she could give an example of the direction this suggests.
It's to make room for the all-around development of the children. In fact, the Delhi government went even a step further. In 2018, the Delhi government launched the happiness curriculum. And the initial reports are very encouraging. They are training young minds on meditation, on core values of gratitude, courage, respect, kindness, and they're focusing on developing their cognitive abilities. These experiments, if you like, are absolutely the step in the right direction.
This step in the right direction, as Ravneet calls it, suggests a move away from quantity-based education to quality education. In Pakistan, meanwhile, there have been curricular revisions and major changes in the education system, specifically a 2010 move to giving provinces more autonomy. I spoke to Dr. Khalid Mahmood, a consultant with over 25 years' experience in the government and private education sectors in Pakistan, to get an idea of how these revisions have worked. To begin, Khalid gave some context by describing the factors affecting academic performance in Pakistan.
Student engagement in the class, perhaps this is the area where we are quite behind in Pakistan, because when you want to engage students in the class, you need better pedagogy and you have to keep update your teachers in their professional lives. There must be a very, very strong continuous professional development program for them, which is perhaps missing in our country. If I discuss the case of Punjab has something which we can say that continuous professional development framework, they actually implemented it for 10 years, but a year back they also rolled it back. Now there is no CPD in Punjab even.
So you're highlighting there, Khalid, that of course the role of teachers is vitally important, but there's just not enough support for them.
We have a very good curriculum revision way back in 2010. And it is recently being again upgraded. But at the same time, we are revising the curriculum. We are upgrading the curriculum. But somebody has to translate this curriculum into the classroom. And if people are not aware what is written in the curriculum and what is the desire of the curriculum, how they can ensure the learning outcome mentioned in the curriculum can be achieved. So that is another reason which comes to the point that we need to translate curriculum not only in the textbooks, but also in teacher training programs, teacher professional development programs.
Right, so would you say it's just a case of more teacher training?
One is, again, the development budget, which is very important to increase for this sector. And the second thing is the curriculum revision must be translated into the classrooms through capacity development of the teachers. So if we can integrate and we have resources and the things for them, then perhaps the learning outcome can be improved in Pakistan also.
We're clearly talking about major changes to move forwards, from Ravneet's example of a new approach to curriculum in Delhi to Dr. Khalid's plan for Punjab and beyond in Pakistan. Whatever the approach, learning outcomes are how these developments can be measured. To explore the theme of learning outcomes in more detail for this episode, Simon spoke to Sarah Richardson. Sarah's research director at the Australian Council for Educational Research in the UK, but until this year, she'd previously spent 3 years in the same role in India.
So Sarah, I think a useful place to start in discussing this theme is to define what exactly we mean when we talk about student learning outcomes?
Sure, it's an important place to start. So I think of learning outcomes for students as what they're expected to know and to be able to do at the end of a course of study. And when we're talking about a course of study, that could be anything from a week or a unit in a textbook all the way through to the end of a program. And I think it's really important to emphasize that it's knowledge and skills. So skills is really the key part. It's about having knowledge and then being able to apply that. And increasingly, we're thinking about the application of knowledge and skills to real world contexts. And really the advantage of having learning outcomes defined is it gives students, it gives teachers, it gives parents, and it gives other educational stakeholders a clear idea of where we should expect students to be at a particular point in their studies. But I think we need to bear in mind there that we're never going to have a point where all students are at the same level. I mean, we know very well that different students advance at different speeds and at different times. And so while learning outcomes give us a sense of where a cohort of students should be, we need to bear in mind individual differences within that cohort.
Great. That's a good starting point. You emphasized knowledge, but even more so skills. In the preliminary interview we did, they also talked about things like courage, respect. They refer to a happiness curriculum. Do these fit into what you've said about knowledge and skills, or are these an even broader view of learning outcomes?
No, I think absolutely they fit in. You know, I think we are moving away from a version of education that we just focus on literacy and numeracy to a real consideration of preparing students for their future lives and a recognition of the fact that we need to prepare people in a holistic way. And we know that, for example, employers are not just looking for people with lots of knowledge and skills in a discipline, but they also want well-rounded individuals. So they want people who have teamwork skills, communication skills, critical thinking skills, creativity, and so forth. So I think it is important that we don't just focus too narrowly only on discipline. I think we do need to broaden that out to think about a whole range of other elements.
You've already alluded to reasons why a focus on student learning outcomes is increasingly important. The point you mentioned just now was to do with employability, in a sense, and getting ready for life. Is that the main driver, or are there others?
No, look, I think a really important driver is that we've got a lot of evidence now that while student enrollment rates have increased massively around the world, which is a fantastic success, there's a lot of evidence that even when students are enrolled in school, they're still really not learning. And that is a massive waste of time and resources if you think about the number of hours per year that students spend in school. So I think that the international community has now shifted to a new understanding of education, that educational success is not about the number of hours that you spend in school, but it's about your level of achievement. And so under the Sustainable Development Goal 4.1, it focuses on completing primary and secondary education, but it equally focuses on relevant and effective learning outcomes. And so I think it's got really a dual purpose. First of all, ensuring that, you know, the resources that individuals, parents, students, teachers, and governments put into education actually result in outcomes that are positive. But equally, for societies, we need to have an educated population for the future. So I think it's very much looking at both of those elements.
Okay, Sarah, so from your last comment, there also seems to be an element of accountability. In other words, we need to justify, in terms of outcomes, the resources that are invested in education.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when we think about resources invested in education, we often think about the money that governments put in, for example. But I think it's important to also think about families. I mean, if disadvantaged families, if they're choosing to send their children to school, they're making a really significant investment. They're taking resources away from other activities, from income generation. And so in order to really respect that investment, we do need to make sure that when their students are in school, that they're actually gaining skills and knowledge that they will be able to use to enhance their life prospects. And I think that that is a really important area of accountability that's really crucial in, as I said, respecting the investment that is being made by parents around the world.
Yeah, that's an important point, which I think is easily overlooked. So you've talked about a shift in international perspectives on student learning outcomes, with a greater focus on skills as opposed to maybe, you know, knowledge for its own sake, with a greater focus on the future and what people are going to be able to do, with maybe less focus on enrollment per se and more on what students actually get out of education. When we think about education in South Asia, how well are they responding to these kinds of more global changes?
Look, I think South Asia is very interesting. South Asian countries are very much moving into an area where a focus on learning outcomes is becoming increasingly important. So many countries in the region have defined learning outcomes now. And in the work that we do supporting governments in capacity around assessment, certainly we've seen a significant shift in a focus on learning outcomes. And I think one of the challenges, however, in this in South Asia is often an understanding of learning outcomes, of how you define them and what you do with them, can be somewhat limited. And often the definition, the way that they've been defined, doesn't really follow global best practice. And this can lead to quite a lot of confusion in how they're interpreted and in what people think are expectations for students.
So maybe it'd be useful just to elaborate a little bit on that point. You said the way that learning outcomes are defined sometimes in South Asian context doesn't follow good global practice. Could you illustrate that perhaps with an example?
Sure. So often what we find is that learning outcomes can be quite descriptive and a little bit convoluted. And when we're thinking about writing learning outcomes, we're following the SMART acronym. They should be specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-bound. And often we will read a learning outcome and think, well, it really doesn't meet any of those. And so this can obviously lead to quite a lot of confusion. And from the perspective of assessment, it's very difficult to assess something if it's not really been defined very clearly. So I think that this is an initial challenge. And this is by no means limited to South Asia. I think this is a challenge that we often see around the world. I think another thing that we do tend to see is often the focus remains on lower order skills. So we see a lot of verbs like know, recall, name. And the problem there is it encourages rote learning. And look, rote learning has long been a standard approach to education in South Asia. But we know that it really doesn't benefit students. It doesn't emphasize skills. So again, I think there's a growing realization that it's not just about defining learning outcomes, but it's about defining learning outcomes in a way that is going to stimulate a contemporary form of education. And that means using verbs such as compare, estimate, evaluate, interpret. And that's something that is often missing.
Great. Those are very clear examples. Thank you. In a context like India, which is one place I'm familiar with, what are the implications for changing the way learning outcomes are defined for the curriculum more generally?
I think there are major implications. I mean, if your curriculum is primarily focused on knowing things, and if learning outcomes are then defined on doing things with that knowledge, inevitably there is going to be need to be a shift in the curriculum. But I think also, and often forgotten, and possibly even more important, is there needs to be a shift in the approach of teachers. And I think this brings us to a significant challenge in South Asia when we're talking about learning outcomes. Many teachers really don't understand the difference between a learning outcome and just a standard curriculum outcome. And many teachers haven't had the training, don't have the skills to be able to alter the way they approach teaching in order to encourage students to gain learning outcomes. So I think we've got a major question around teacher capacity, as well as the way in which curricula are constructed and learning materials are developed.
This contrast you've made, Sarah, between a learning outcome and a curriculum outcome. Again, it might be useful for listeners to illustrate that difference with an example if possible.
I think when you think about in a curriculum, it might be that students have learned to do two-digit division, for example. And you wouldn't really phrase that as a learning outcome. You would phrase that in a way that focuses on the skills and the application of that knowledge. So it does change the emphasis in a subtle but an important way.
You referred earlier, Sarah, to some of the work you've done with state education systems in South Asia. Perhaps this is a good place for you to tell us a little bit about a particular project where there has been a focus on raising learning outcomes amongst students and what the major results of the work have been and any particular challenges that arose.
As I said, we've worked with quite a few of the countries in South Asia. I can give a particular example of one of the states that we worked with in India. And of course, Indian states are the size of many countries around the world. They're absolutely enormous in size. And in this particular state, they had a real focus on enhancing student learning. And it was just at the time that learning outcomes had been introduced. So it was a very good opportunity to start to rethink the way in which they approached assessment. And so we did a lot of capacity development with teachers in that state around how they could think about learning outcomes when they were assessing students, how they could develop assessment materials that help students show not just only their knowledge, but also their skills and their ability to reason. And I from what we hear, we're still in touch with a lot of the teachers via WhatsApp groups. They're still applying those principles in their classroom. And I think it led to quite a significant shift in their thinking and in their understanding of what they were trying to achieve in terms of student learning in their teaching practice.
And were these changes in what teachers were doing, were they accompanied by broader changes in the educational system, you said, as well?
Yeah, so as I said, this was in a context in which learning outcomes were just beginning to be defined in India, something that has now moved on a little bit more. And I think, often one of the challenges in countries of the scale of India is information that starts at central government level, by the time it's filtered down to the level of a teacher, often has been quite diluted. So I think one of the key elements for us was to be able to talk directly to teachers, and directly to teachers who then were able to talk to their colleagues and to change practices in their schools. And so I think, you start to see a different approach to both measuring student learning outcomes, but also for teachers in thinking about how they're going to help students gain those learning outcomes. But in education, inevitably, any significant change always takes time. And so you're not going to see, a miraculous change in student achievement overnight. But I think it's really an important beginning. And by focusing on teachers who are the ones who are critical in influencing, most critical, certainly in influencing student learning outcomes, I think we were able to have quite a significant impact.
Yes, I completely agree with that kind of approach to, in terms of working directly with teachers. One challenge I've experienced in projects of that kind is that teachers are willing to change and acquire the ability to do so, but then the system, of course, remains incompatible. So in your projects, have there been parallel changes, for example, to assessment systems?
Yeah, I think it really depends who is in charge of education systems. In that particular state, we were very lucky in that all of the senior people in education and in leading education in that state were very innovative, were very forward-looking, were very keen to modernize their education system as much as possible. But it's very difficult for teachers to work in a system where those people are not in place, because they're often being pulled in different directions. And I think one of the key challenges that we often see is that learning outcomes have been defined and they're beginning to indicate a greater emphasis on skills, but then assessment materials are still very much focused on students simply recalling something that they'd learnt. And so you've got a bit of a contradiction that is often in place.
So what you are saying here is that it's good for teachers to be thinking about other ways of defining learning outcomes, but it's also important for the system more generally to change in a way that supports those efforts.
Absolutely. All of the system needs to work together. And that means, you know, national government, that means state government. But it also means going down below that to the district level and to the block level and to the school level. And this is often where the problem lies. As I said, there can be great plans at the national level, but they often really don't filter down.
You've mentioned the measurement of learning outcomes in one of your answers. I think that's another theme that's worth spending a little bit more time on. So what are some of the challenges that arise when it comes to measuring student learning outcomes in a way that's meaningful? And what are some contemporary approaches to the measurement of learning outcomes that seem to work effectively?
Yeah, I think this is a really important question. So whenever we construct assessments, and this could be anything in any country around the world or at a global level, we're always looking to get the right balance of questions that ask about knowledge, of questions that ask about the application of knowledge, and of questions that ask about reasoning. And reasoning and application is really tapping into those higher order skills. Now, one of the problems, unfortunately, that we find in South Asia is that while students are very comfortable answering questions about their knowledge, they become very uncomfortable as soon as you ask them to apply that knowledge to different situations. So for example, if you give them a circle and ask them to calculate the circumference of that circle, they're quite happy to do that. But as soon as you change that and give them, for example, a bicycle wheel, which is basically exactly the same question, then they really struggle. And I think that this reflects how they're being taught in school. And often we say that how you design assessment drives teaching and learning. And so I think it is really important to start ensuring that all of the assessment that students are given is really calling on them to use those higher order skills, because that will then drive a focus in teaching and learning on those higher order skills. Unfortunately, at the moment, that's not what we see. Even when learning outcomes have been defined, we still see that the assessment is focusing very much on what students can remember.
So it sounds like there's a lot of parallel work that needs to be done in terms of assessment literacies for teachers and policymakers more generally as well.
Absolutely. And we're currently engaged with a project with the Regional Office for South Asia in UNICEF on exactly that, to develop a web portal of assessment resources for assessment practitioners across the region. And this is exactly the need that is there, is to share good practice, but also to enhance the capacity of people designing assessment to be able to do it in a way that is going to positively influence teaching and learning.
So in terms of summing up, perhaps, if we think about an audience of policymakers from South Asia who are listening to this podcast, what would some of the key messages be for them if they want to adopt a more effective approach to student learning outcomes in their educational systems?
I think, first of all, when learning outcomes are being developed and defined, it needs to be done very carefully. It's not something that can be done in a rush. And I think it's important to really take time to do a good job rather than to try and sort of tick a box and say, OK, we've got them now. And secondly, as I've mentioned a number of times, it's really, really important that when learning outcomes are defined, that there is a good focus on higher order skills, on application, on reasoning, on critical thinking, and as much as possible on real world problems. And third, when learning outcomes have been defined, that's not enough. That's only the first step. There's then an awful lot of work that needs to be done in terms of curricula, in terms of learning resources, and I think most importantly, in terms of teacher skills and teacher training. I think all of the evidence from around the world is that teachers are the key resources in determining student learning outcomes. And I think that a lot of teachers simply don't have the skills and the knowledge to adapt their teaching in a way that is going to help students to gain these outcomes. And then finally, I think a critical element, as I've mentioned, is how you assess learning outcomes. If you define them in a way to stimulate higher order thinking, you also need to measure them in a way that's going to measure their ability to apply their skills.
That was Sarah Richardson speaking to Simon. And I'm with Simon now to highlight some key issues from this episode. Simon, all of the interviewees mentioned the challenges faced in this area. What would you highlight? And would you add anything else to what's been said?
So if we go back to what Sarah told us, I think there were three key challenges she highlighted in relation to learning objectives, which are worth repeating here. The first one was how to define objectives that are actually SMART and which go beyond a focus on lower order skills and also focus, for example, on reasoning and application. That's the first challenge. A second challenge that Sarah noted was that we need to develop assessment literacy among teachers so that they understand what learning objectives are, they understand how to define them, they understand how to use them in a way that supports learning. The third challenge that Sarah mentioned was the importance of alignment across the system. In other words, changing learning objectives in isolation of everything else isn't really going to get us very far. There need to be corresponding changes in assessment and teaching, and all of these changes within the system need to be aligned.
Yes, both Ravneet and Khalid talked of the need for quite systemic changes, supporting teachers and so on. Now, is there anything else that you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, I think there are two final points maybe we can comment on. One is the fact that educational success is not really just about time spent in school, but more about quality of achievement. Of course, the more time students spend in school, the better, but that on its own does not guarantee quality achievement. We do need to focus on what it is they're actually learning. The second point I think that's come up a few times in our discussion of learning outcomes today is the fact that learning outcomes need to focus not just on knowledge in a traditional sense, not just facts, not just rote learning, but also on skills. And perhaps skills are becoming increasingly more important when we think of education as preparing students for participation in a real world context.
Okay, thanks, Simon. Now, don't forget, if you're interested in reading more about the theme from this episode, you can find related links on the same page as this recording. And if you'd like to comment on what you've heard, do share your thoughts. You can let us know what you think on Facebook or Twitter using the hashtag EducationSouthAsia. That's hashtag EducationSouthAsia. There are plenty of other episodes to check out in this series too, from learning outcomes and inclusive education to the use of ICT. If this is the first episode you've heard, then you can find more information published with this podcast about the series. Thanks very much for listening to this episode of Education in Focus South Asia. From Simon and me, goodbye.